Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy, and we are talking today to Gwenna Lathland, who is better known to her millions of followers on TikTok and other social media as Mama Cusses. Gwenna's content is dedicated to remembering that being a kid is harder than we remember, and being a parent is harder than we expected. Gwenna is also the author of the brand new book, Mama Cusses, A Field Guide to Responsive Parenting and Trying Not to Be the Reason Your Kid Needs Therapy. Welcome, Gwenna.
Hello. It's so nice to be on here with you ladies.
You call yourself a parenting unexpert. I love that term. I think I am that term. Explain to us what that means.
So I firmly believe that there's no such thing as a parenting expert. There are human beings who have very specialized expertise in some aspects of childhood development. So I'm talking pediatricians, therapists, nutritionists. They know a whole lot about one part of what makes a child into a good person. But that doesn't make them parenting experts. It means that their resources are invaluable. It means they are wildly necessary, but that's not the whole picture. You are the only expert on raising your specific child. Because no one else has your conditions, no one else has your environment, no one else has your family arrangement. You are the best expert on raising your own kids. And I write in my book, if that feels a little bit like a punch in the gut to realize that you are the only expert on raising your kid because you have no clue what you're doing, that's what it's supposed to feel like.
That's what makes it hard and a heavy lift. But I like that. It's not dismissive of expertise, but it's also remembering. I feel like we talk a lot on the podcast about this because we each have three kids and you're like, well, that's good advice for one of my kids. And then like
one of one, 33% success rate is not bad, but
yeah. And I think, you know, we listen to a lot of parenting advice and we talk to a lot of parenting quote unquote experts. Although I feel like most people are like, don't ever use. Somebody once said in front of my kids, aren't you a parenting expert? And I was like, no, do not ever say that again. And definitely my kids were like, no, definitely not. But that's, I think there's a line between like reject it all where you just feel like you're on your own on an island of like, okay, nobody can help me because nothing anyone says is valuable. And like, I feel like a jerk because my kids don't eat snails at midnight like the good French children I read about in parenting expert books.
So I, like tons of other people, have imposter syndrome. And there was a point at which, seriously, what can I add to the conversation that has not already been said by people with alphabet soup after their name and years of study and very specific fields and development? And what could I add? Here's where I come down to what I add is I might be saying the same thing as my foremothers and forefathers and forebearers of parenting have already said, but I may be saying it in a way that for the first time ever clicks for a reader. Oh, that's what that fits into our life. That fits into our home. I'm capable of that. That other thing that person said, that made no sense. We said the same thing. We just said it differently. So that's what I was aiming for. I'm not pretending I have alphabet soup. I'm not pretending I know everything. I readily and often admit in the book, I don't know. This could work. I don't know. There's just because it doesn't work for you doesn't make it a bad idea. It just means it's bad for you, but it may apply to someone else's life, to someone else's family, to someone else's specific situation. So no, there's no such thing as an expert. I'm not an expert on my own kids that I made with my body. I have no idea what they're doing, like 90% of the time.
Yeah, they're still so mysterious. Oh.
I wanted to ask you, Gwenna, about your mom's experience, which you talk about in the book. It sort of placed in contrast to where we're entering the picture, right? That her choice as a mom was Dr. Spock or the pediatrician. You know, there were no podcasts, there was no internet group, nothing. And do you mind telling us a story about when she took you to the doctor with some concerns?
So I was born way back in 1984, and medical science was really different. And on top of that, my dad, actually both my parents at one point, were military. So we went to the base hospital because we had base insurance, and that was the simplest way. I was born clinically deaf, but it took them a long time to figure out, because when my mom took me to the military doctor held up some cards and asked me some things, and I responded in utter and complete gibberish. And this highly experienced and just biding out time till retirement doctor went, I'm choosing carefully a word. She's mentally exceptional, except he didn't say mentally exceptional. He said the R word. Because it was 1987. It was a different time. And my mom went, no, I'm like 90% sure there were expletives said in that office. No. And here's what I think of your opinion and where you can put it. She took me to a civilian doctor, and they're like, oh, no, she's not mentally exceptional. She's deaf. Like, she just can't hear anything. So I had a couple quick procedures. Some science was done inside my head. And while I am still a member of the hard of hearing community. No one ever had to teach me sign language. I didn't have to wear like the really cool battery pack hearing aids that I would have been assigned. My mom very much advocated for me in a time where it would have been perfectly acceptable just to accept, oh no, we think that she is a special education candidate, and she's never going to evolve into a successful, healthy, communicative adult because her brain is wired different. And that sucks for you. Good luck. My mom's like, no, I see it different. You're wrong.
Right.
Bye.
And that took a lot of confidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And where does that come from, do you think, in your mom? Like, is that force of character, personality? Like, I think for so many people, I've been confronted with a similar circumstance with one of my own kids. And I had the same feeling, but I will say I wavered a little bit on like, but smart people are telling me X and I'm seeing Y. But it was hard for me to get back to X. You know, I felt really stuck in the thing of like, smart people are telling me this thing that doesn't match with what I'm feeling and seeing, but they seem smart. So like, where does that come from in your mom to say, I'm going to reject that?
So I think for my mom, and I'm having to extrapolate because it's not a question I've ever specifically asked her, although I'm gonna now.
Next week.
We'll get her on the podcast next week.
I think for my mom, where that came from is because my mom lacked this sort of wealth of information. I say in my book that the internet is a double-edged sword. It's provided us an unknowable, it's invaluable community connection. We can share stories. We can trade information.
But
there's lots of resources available on the internet, but it also becomes an information glut where everything is being thrown at you and you have no idea what's up, what's down. It's just an avalanche of too much sometimes.
I think that's right. And then you start to feel like, okay, Dr. Mom, who's on Google, while the experts are really telling you what's really happening. And it's like,
I know.
I think it's hard to find. I think it can be hard. And I struggle with this because I feel like sometimes people on the podcast are like, always trust your instincts. And I'm like, that is not good advice. Like, don't always trust your instincts. Like, sometimes your instincts are right. I've had my instincts be completely right. And I have some OCD tendencies. So like, sometimes my instincts are like, if you don't touch this doorknob 56 times,
right,
an asteroid will fall on your head. Like, don't trust that instinct.
That's not a thing to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's very easy to get lost in like, trust your instincts, but not here. And trust this and da, 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 and the internet's bad, but sometimes it really helps.
I think that's where it comes from. My mom, didn't have that overwhelming crush of a billion people saying things. So when it came down to a very smart person with all the letters and all the studying and all the expertise is saying that your daughter is one way, but your instincts are, no, she's just not talking right. All of her other milestones are fine. And in some cases, advanced. And the talking is the only criteria. No, I don't. it feels ick, and we're going to keep exploring. You might be right, but I don't think you are. So we're going to go find somebody else. And sure enough, my mom's instincts were correct, but she was working with instincts that could only be informed by Dr. Spock, the community of moms in the neighborhood that we lived in, and her own childhood experience. She didn't have the wealth of the internet, which again, double-edged sword. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's very injurious.
Let's talk about the internet, because you turned to the internet during the pandemic, and that was the birth of Mama Casa. So tell us about that, how that got started.
In 2018, I gave birth to twins, and I was forced out of the workforce. And I say forced out of the workforce with no bitterness. I love that that was an opportunity that was given to me, but I only love it in hindsight. At the time, there was an income gap in that we could not afford daycare for two infants, nor could we afford me not to work. Like, we were in the two income trap, and it was not a pleasant time because there was no winning with that situation. So I stayed home. I was very excited to stay home with the kids. I was less excited about not being able to pay the electric bill. So it was a very bittersweet choice. And I turned to my ancient well of skills in that I used to be a writer. I'd written for publications. I'd written for websites. I'd written for my college paper. And I just started writing stuff on the internet. And I eventually found a platform called Medium, which allowed me to write whatever I wanted and gave me a little bit of passive income from that. And so I started writing about parenting because it was what I was doing at the time. It was the forefront of my mind. It was every waking moment and some of the sleeping moments of my day was dedicated to not making these flesh-wrapped potatoes die. So I just started writing about parenting, and some were very satirical. Some were very in the moment, but I discovered people really liked it. And then in 2020, so this would have been January of 2020, just before the world shut down.
Something's about to go very wrong.
My eldest, who was at the time 13 or 14, I'm bad at math and ages, 13 or 14, somewhere around there. She walked in the room and she said, "Mom, I found this really cool music app called TikTok." I was like, can't pull one over on me. That's a social media app. And we had very firm, serious rules around social media. However, she had just hit the point at which we agreed to examine closely her use and interaction with social media. So I was like, okay, let me download it. Let me download this TikTok thing. Let me see what it's like, see what you're going to be confronted with, and we'll move on from there. And she's like, okay, but Mom, please, whatever you do, don't post anything.
Oops, famous last
words. So that was her first mistake. So I posted something stupid. I believe the kids call it cringe now.
Oh, so cringe. So cringe. My breathing, it turns out, is so cringe. Who knew? Who knew that was possible?
Yeah, no. My hair right now, absolute cringe. Apparently, I liked it. But no, I posted that first video and I found the same sort of engagement, that same sort of hunger, that it's not just... There are plenty of moms, you know, from back in the mommy blog days, from back in the Pinterest perfect days that were presenting sometimes really good ideas of ways to entertain your kids. And, you know, I followed a lot of Montessori moms, which I'm not mad at Montessori moms at all. I love that. It's just never going to work for me. It's never going to work in my home. So like it felt very disconnected. And when I started posting these things, people are like, well, this looks real. I was like, because it is. Well, this feels normal. That's because it is. Oh, this is a thing I can do in my home. That's because it is. And it just sort of, my social media presence was an absolute accident until it wasn't. And I don't remember at which point I realized, oh, this is more than me wasting time. This is more than me, you know, I'm not just becoming a part of a community. I'm building a community. Oh, well, that's new.
Right. And then what? We're talking to Gwenna Lathland. She is the creator of Mama Casas and the author of the new book, Mama Casas. And we'll be right back. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. So, Gwenna, you created this platform, not by accident, but like, oh, people like this. All of a sudden, you have millions of followers. I've followed your content during the pandemic. I really enjoyed it. And it was, I'm quoting from your book here, your videos, you said, were about how narrowly you were clinging to your sense of self as a mother. And I think that was like,
ding,
that was the button that everybody's like, yes, that is for me. That content is for me. And so then you have millions of followers. And then at what point did you think, okay, I have a responsibility towards this community, or do I create more of what they want? How did you start to think about it?
To be fair, it really still stayed. I continued to create for myself. And the fact that others were able to benefit from it, others were seeing sense or logic or comfort or solutions in what I was saying. Essentially, I realized sometime back in the Medium days, and then that immediately shifted to the social media days, that I want to create the resource I wish I'd had. I was not always the type of parent that I was. And I talk a lot about that. I call it responsive parenting. A lot of the internet will call it gentle parenting. I was not always that sort of responsive. I'm going to think about not just the thing that I'm trying to teach you, but how I'm communicating that to you, how this is actually going to sink into your gray matter and what feelings are going to be attached to it, because that's going to tremendously affect how you process this information moving forward. When I made that sort of shift, my daughter was 6 or 7, and I had already really started leaning into what I now consider problematic habits that I had learned from my own childhood that were really just a matter of my reacting to what was happening at all times, in all ways. There was never an ounce of planning. There was never an ounce of forethought because I didn't have the mental capacity to offer that, to do that. So when I started shifting into this more intentional, intuitive, emotionally forward sense of communication with my children, at the time it was just one, this was the resource that I wish I'd had. This was the voice that I wished someone had just like grabbed me by the shirt collar and, you are making your problems your kids, and that's dumb. Stop. Like this. So I've just continued to, when I have a question, if I've ever had a question, if I remember something like, oh yeah, that was really hard to do. I'm now entering a period of my little's lives where they're beginning to tie their shoes, or they're wanting to, but they suck at it and I hate it.
No, times two.
I'm sorry that's happening to you. It's terrible. I'm going to admit right here, my kids wore Velcro tie shoes until they were like 10. And then I was like, all right, everyone sit down. We're doing tying one time. for one Saturday because I just couldn't. I had three kids and they're 18 months apart apiece. And I was like, this is the thing that's going to break me, the shoe tying. And so I just was like, forget it. No one's tying their shoes. And the occupational people at school were like, they don't know how to tie their shoes. I'm like, it's built into the plan. We're going to make it work. I'm going to teach them when they're 10.
There's a brand of shoe, I won't say its name, but there's a brand of shoe that they're just slip-on. They look like tie shoes, so they can look like their peers who can already tie them, but they just slip on. They just, the little heel pops right up. Yeah, my kids are getting those sooner rather than later because...
So mentally, I don't know what it was about waiting for them to tie there. It's like, sound out the word. You're like, it's animal. You know,
stretchy shoelaces. There's stretchy shoelaces you can get online too. That's what I got for my kids. And so it turns any shoes into slip-on shoes.
Well, see, and I justify it that as an adult, I don't tie my shoes either. Like, I just slide all of my shoes on. I barely buy tie shoes. And when I do, I just leave them tied.
Right.
It's fine. They'll figure it out.
So going back to this concept of, we'll call it for the moment, gentle parenting, responsive parenting is what you call it. I think there's something that works on social media between like message and messenger. And that it's when those two things come together that it really works. And I think sometimes for me, I see the message from people that just seem like they live on a different planet than me. Like the people, if you have a chalkboard anywhere in your house that you write in cursive on, like I can't learn from you because you just seem like you're made of different DNA than I am.
Yeah, this is a life that's working for you, but I'm not seeing how it looks like mine.
It just feels. And I think that before starting the podcast, I kind of had this idea about certain forms of parenting and that gentle parenting was maybe in this category, that I'm a kind of explosive personality, I guess. And like the idea of bringing gentleness into my parenting seems kind of, we have an expression on the podcast, tweet, tweet, like a little too, it's a little, all right, tweet, tweet, go do your gentle parenting. How did you come to the idea of gentle parenting? And did you have that feeling at all when you approached it in terms of like, this seems mysterious from the way that I was raised, which it did to me?
So the term gentle parenting was not actually one that I used, even though I was technically using what we would now consider gentle parenting techniques. I was told post beginning to write a parenting resource on Medium, post beginning to post about how I was parenting on social media. It wasn't until mid-pandemic, so mid-2020, once I'd started to experience growth, I was gathering a following on TikTok, that someone's like, you're a gentle parent. I was like, I'm a what? You're a gentle parent. Okay. Yeah. No, I heard the words, but those don't,
but
those two things aren't, they don't go together.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not a gentle person.
Uh-huh.
I'm not. And so I started deep diving into what gentle parenting was. And sure enough, it does align. In the book, I describe the big blow up. And essentially, you'll have to read the book for the full detail, but I had a moment with my fifis and I did not handle them well. It was a very bad, no good, terrible, awful day. And I took that out on my 6 or 7 year old daughter at the time. Just an explosive screaming match. I was really screaming at the universe, but my face was pointed at my daughter while I was doing that. And I had a moment of absolute clarity where for just a sec, my soul hovered above my body and I'm watching this play out where I'm just spittle flying. The neighbors can hear me at conversational volumes, just laying into a literal child as if she was the cause for all of my dysregulation. And she was pinching her little face. She was pulling in, she was making herself smaller. And it was just knife, insert, gut. And that's when I realized, this is bad. This isn't just me losing my cool for a moment. This is going to irreparably damage not just my relationship with my daughter, but my daughter, if I don't change this. So I hit the internet because it was 2010, 2014, somewhere in there. It's what you do.
Time to Google.
I found two resources, neither of which called it gentle parenting. One of them called connected parenting. And I forget what the other one exactly called it. They didn't really have a unified terminology. One was on Facebook. One was on Reddit. Neither group exists anymore for various reasons. They've just faded from the internet consciousness. But that was my first set of resources to go, you are being the problem here. Whatever your daughter said to trigger you, that's not her problem to deal with. You have to deal with your own triggers before you make it their problem. And it was sort of the first, oh, parenting starts with me. I've been doing that wrong for a bit then.
We always say on the podcast, we're like, the bad news is you have to model the behavior.
Yeah.
See, I'm sorry, guys. I want to tell you that it's in a book. I want to tell you there's a secret, but here's the bad news. You have to be the person you want them to turn out to be. It just stinks. I'm sorry.
That's where I've been stuck, I think, watching gentle parenting from the outside. My kids are older, you know, so gentle parenting like became a thing when my kids were already like tweens and teens. So it's not that I don't think it's a good idea, but when I watch, you know, somebody of a very young child on the internet in a blackboard in the kitchen type of house, right, doing the like, you know, tell me about your feelings. Like, if you hit mommy in the face, this is an opportunity for me to gently ask you about your feelings. And I'm sort of like, you know, raised in a different time, right? And there was something in your book you said about the first thing you have to learn about responsive parenting that's hard is you say, like, I'm out here responsively parenting for 10 minutes now. My kids are not responsively childing at all. Like, this isn't working. And that's not the point, right? And that's where I think I'm like, oh, that's where I'm getting stuck, right? That this works in 10 minutes to change their behavior. That's not what it's about.
It's absolutely the long game. And it's absolutely, by the time you look at your offspring and go, you are emotionally mature, you know how to communicate, you understand empathy, you can set your own boundaries and expect people to enforce them and inform them when they have crossed a boundary, and you can respect and try to understand another person's boundary. Like, when you can do that, you're probably no longer looking at a child. You're probably looking at a whole human. Like, that's a grown man who you're looking at now.
Looking up at, in my case.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm fully aware my 5-year-old son will be taller than me as he's 5. He's past my elbow.
It's a weird feeling. You're like, oh, my neck hurts when I'm talking to you.
Yeah. Like, I'm still your mother. Come down here.
But that's the end game for responsive parenting, is thinking about. Okay.
Yeah. And here's the other thing is labels on the internet are really important because you got to know where to look. You have to be looking for something. If you type in parenting, you're going to get every bit of the internet since 1997 that has ever been talking about parenting. And since none of us have any idea what we're doing, and that has been true since the dawn of time, there's just a metric ton of information about parenting. Not all of it works. Not all of it's even good. And I don't say that lightly. There is bad parenting advice out there. But when you have something like the big blow up where you realize, oh my gosh, this is not the way. This is not how I want to be. This is not how I want my relationship with my kid to go. Well, what do you do? Like, how do you look that up? So terms like gentle parenting are really important, but then they're so easily twisted. And I don't say that in a nefarious way, but gentle parenting and something called permissive parenting are often woven together, sometimes in such a way it annoys. I am not a permissive parent. There are absolutely ways to get down, and that is not the way to do this. You know, it's the tweet tweet homes, and it works for them, I think, I hope. But there are still ways to be emotionally available, open, communicative, empathetic, and our kids need so much empathy. They're people who aren't good at people yet. They're just really bad at being people. They're still learning that. That's what childhood is learning how to be a good person, right? So there are absolutely ways that we can empathetically communicate with our kids without, oh no, 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 no. No, you can be straight up, you're going to stop or I'm going to make you stop. Like, that's still acceptable.
There's something in between those things, as it turns out. All right, let's take a break. We're talking to Gwenna Laithlin, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the specifics a little bit of responsive parenting.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
So I like the term responsive parenting, especially I really understood it when you describe it as starting as a reactive parent. That's the place. And still, I mean, if you boil me down to my core, I am reactive in every way. I'm a reactive person. I am a reactive eater. I am a reactive sleeper. I do everything reactively. And Amy and I have talked about it a ton on the podcast in terms of she's really helped me with the concept of you don't have to accept every invitation to every fight that your children offer you, which is not my strength.
I love that.
I'm like, you mean that they can slam a door upstairs and you just let them go into their room and calm down without running upstairs and opening the door? You will not. I mean, I'm just so reactive at my core and I'm working on it. So talk about the difference between being reactive and being responsive.
Okay. So I want you to imagine that you have gone outside. You're going to be outside all day. You have two ways to prepare for this. One is to get up, get dressed, and then go outside. And then find ways to deal with whatever the weather has thrown at you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a reaction. You walk outside. Oh my gosh, it's raining. Now you have to find like an old Walmart bag from under your car to put over your head. You know, you're
put it on your head. Yeah.
You've regretted the shoe choice because you're wearing your Crocs that day and the water just gets in.
Again, this sounds very much like me. Yes.
So you're reacting to the weather. Your other option is to open the weather app on your phone and go, oh, it's going to rain. So now you choose the solid shoes with like the lining on them that the water's not going to get in. You don't worry with the hair, or you just put on a cap that day. That is a response. You cannot change that the weather is going to be rainy and that you have to be out in it, but you can react or you can respond. The same thing is possible in parenting. I cannot predict that my child is going to choose this moment to melt down about bowl color. So my options are be completely blindsided by this even being an option or an action of my child, and then just have to react, which some reactions may be great. Some may be less than stellar. Or you can know my child is coming to this meal and it's hangry. We missed a snack. We were out and about. This may or may not go well. So now I can prepare a response. I've got the blue bowl. I wanted the red bowl. I understand that you want the red bowl, but the red bowl is not an option. So you can eat it with your bare hands or you can use the blue bowl. But either way, snack is going to happen and the color of the bowl doesn't affect anything. So now you've had a chance to mentally prepare yourself for my kid might have a meltdown and I am ready with a way to try to mitigate this. That does not mean that your child's not going to still trigger you. That doesn't mean that you're going to do it perfect, but you had an opportunity to look at your little weather app before you went outside.
Right. It's easy to talk about. That's right.
It's so smart. It seems so simple. And also,
it's so easy to talk about. It is not easy to do.
Would I end up getting believe me. I mean, no, we have a podcast. This is what we do for a living. We talk about things and how easy they are when you're not in it. That's pretty much our livelihood. And it also keeps you out of, I think, because we say this all the time in the podcast. Don't do it unless it works. That's the key. This, you don't do it because the book says it's the best way to parent. It keeps you also from what are the crazy making conversations of parenthood, which is blue and red are just different colors. They don't affect the taste of the food. They're the same. Like you end up having a conversation as if you are also a 2-year-old. And those are the conversations. And now I have tweens and teens. And let me tell you, we're still doing this. Like, I'm actually not outrageous. I am a mom and I'm trying to keep you safe. It's like you're having a conversation as if you're another 14-year-old. And I think this gives you the status of like the kind of calm referee, or you're kind of the sane voice in the conversation, and you're not getting stuck in the two 5-year-olds fighting about the color of a bowl.
I like to view it as I am giving a microphone to the sane voice in my head, because it doesn't mean that the absolute moronic idiot who's going to try to argue with a 3-year-old who lives inside my head is not still there. She's there and just chomping at the bit to have her take, but she's not the one holding the microphone this time.
She's just not running the show. She's not at the controls. Yes.
You know, it's like the way we were raised in the 80s, 70s for us. You make a really good point in the book that good emotions were something to have and express. Bad emotions were something to suppress, right? That was the option. Express or suppress, not regulate, right? You're not supposed to be mad about the bowl. I'm not supposed to. If I grew up being in a house where you couldn't ever complain about the bowl, or that you'd be punished if you complain about the bowl, whatever, that wasn't a thing. It's like, you're not supposed to be having this big reaction about the blue bowl, kid. Suppress that instead of, let me help you feel better about it. It's just not something we learn to do necessarily as children. And so it's this middle space where this occurs. This regulation is a new concept for some of us.
Right. And sometimes it is what we were raised with is our parents just lacked the information. I can look at a behavior and go, that's developmentally appropriate, because I've had access to the internet and those experts in specific fields going, yeah, the hitting thing, they're 18 months old. That's developmentally appropriate. It doesn't make it less annoying. It doesn't make it less hard to deal with. And it doesn't actually give you a solution to them still getting language on board. And when they have a big feeling, they lash out with teeth or nails or hands or feet. That doesn't change that. But it does make it in a way that I can now turn inward and go, my kid is being really frustrating because my kid has to get through this stage. It's the same with the shoe tying. My kid has to learn how to tie their shoes. I can do it now or I can do it later. And there's not necessarily a wrong way. There's not necessarily a wrong time in this specific choice. My kid has to get through this stage. The best I can do is regulate myself so I do not accidentally reinforce, oh, when I hit, I get a reaction. Like, things change. I am changing what is happening around me because I hit. Well, if I am able to, no, we do not hit. I will not let you hit me. I'm going to put you down if you try to hit me again. And then you enforce that boundary. I'm not being sickly sweet. But I'm also not just allowing this behavior to go unchecked, but I am also not expecting my 18-month-old to gain a year of development in their brains in 32 seconds because I told them hands are not for hitting.
That's right. And I think that where this gets lost in translation, especially, you know, for people who were not raised this way and were raised differently, is that it gets set up, I feel like, as a binary between being permissive or being kind. Am I setting that binary up right? It's like, right, that like you can either, yeah, you could be permissive and kind, or you can be mean and have boundaries. And that's it. That's right. That's the binary that gets set up. And that it's been very educational for me talking to people on the podcast of like, this is not about like, oh, I'm so glad you could get your feelings out punching mommy in the face. I'm so glad you were able to express that feeling, that you are still, and you talk about this really specifically in helping kids regulate, that like it's recognizing, but then it's also reinforcing the boundaries.
Yeah. You can be mad all you need to, but you may not make your mad my problem. And it's probably not going to change the outcome. The blue bowl is still, in fact, dirty. And your fit is not enough to cause me to wash it. I have, in fact, said you cannot have the car keys. I gave you all the really valid reasons. There's literally 3 inches of ice out there. You're not driving to go get a Dr. Pepper, kid. You can be mad at me. I am strong enough to let you be mad at me. But I'm not going to change my decision. Your anger changes nothing.
But that's a mouthful right there, because I remember when I had little kids, Amy's kids are, you know, 5 or 6 years older than my kids, let's say. And she would say, like, we were talking on the podcast about, well, it's really hard when your kids, you know, are really giving you a hard time and being hard on you. And I could not relate to that as a parent of a 2, 3, 4 year old. Like, oh, they're so ridiculous when they get mad. Like, who cares? And then they're huggy. But I'm telling you, I got tweens and teens now. And you said it, like, I am strong enough to kind of withstand this. I think that part, sometimes we don't think about how hard it can really be to be like, I actually don't want my kids mad at me. I mean, I have to withstand it, but I struggle with it. It's really hard for me, especially when I'm tired and I'm feeling low. Like, I kind of sometimes want to take that path of least resistance and not always be the strong one. It stinks.
Well, and there's a part of me that recognizes, I say it in several ways in the book, but a lot of times, I'm going to say this gently, and if you feel attacked for a sec, just roll with it. I'll make it better. Promise.
You just said, take a number. The people attacking me to the left, form an orderly line.
So I maintain that mistakes are as important as being intentional with the decisions you're making on how you raise your kids. So you can read my book, you can watch my content, you can read Carla Nomberg, you can read my Clean Do Clef, you can read all the big names on the parenting shelf and really have a solid plan of, this is how I'm going to approach these things. I'm going to be proactive in my emotional regulation. I am going to be responsive in my kids' dysregulation toward me. I know what to do. And then everything happens and you blow a gasket. You absolutely melt down in the freezer aisle of a Walmart. You called your kid a name. You said, we're never going to eat ice cream ever again. Just burn it all down. Get in the car. I don't even want to look at you. Go in the backseat.
We are never going. I saw a mom once yell at her kids, we are never going outside again. And I was like, Hunger Games salute, ma'am. I feel you. We are never going outside again.
You did all the reading. You did all the prep work. You did all the practice. And all of a sudden, it doesn't work. Now you have a great opportunity to teach your kids even more. And that has been a revolutionary mindset to me, is now I get to apologize to them. Now I get to show them how to own your mistakes. Now I get to show how to do the repair work, not just to our relationship, but to the information. Now you get to watch me be a good human after a bad moment.
So good. Gwenna, this book, I think our listeners are going to love this book because you're so funny and you walk the walk, right? You're one of us. And it is full, as you can tell from having listened to Gwenna in this episode, of actually useful, applicable information presented not from this mountaintop of parenting expert, but at this, like, you're going to try and maybe this will work one day and maybe this will work the next day. And it's so useful. So Gwenna, tell us about you, your book, everywhere our listeners can find
you. So it is out now. It is at pretty much every major retailer. If your favorite locally owned bookstore is not carrying mine, they can ask for it. I'm with St. Martin's Press. And you can also request it from your local library. I feel it's really important to just read the book. I don't really care how you get it. Please don't steal it, though. For the sake of the bookstores, don't steal it. Not that.
We all have our lines in that.
There's a line in the sand. I've drawn it. Don't steal the book. But you can also, if reading the book is not a thing, you can download it as a ebook. It is available as an audiobook that I narrated myself. My eldest daughter wrote the foreword for it, and she narrated the foreword for it, if you're interested in the audio version. It was a really sweet moment. You can also find me online. I am Mama Cusses in most of the places. And on YouTube, I'm at Pleasant Peasant Media. It's more of the same, but, you know, with my pretty face.
Well, we will link to all of the places you can find everything Mama Cusses, and especially link to where you can get the book. Gwenna, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Gwenna.
Thank you for having me on.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.